is not going to matter. Smoked into left, a base hit. Kirk comes in to score. Espinal getting the wave. He'll come in to score. Chapman into second with a double, and it is 2-0 Blue Jays.
And the Royals get shut out again. 7-0. Same final as they had the night before. More on that coming up in a little bit, but we're going to go to something a little bit more uplifting. We're going to go to Dusty as the 8-man All-Stars have arrived in Beloit, and they are practicing, getting ready for the big games on Saturday. And we go to Dusty live in Beloit with the practice and some local players.
Yeah, we're NCK Tech in Beloit, and we have a few Thunder Ridge players here as the Division II East squad is getting practices rolling today and started the install last night a little bit and putting everybody in here today. And we'll have all three of the Longhorns that are represented here at this year's 8-man All-Star Games as Owen Arabia will join us first, try to stay out of the wind. It's a breezy day, beautiful day for practice, though. Owen Arabia from Thunder Ridge joining us first here. Owen, I know you've had the opportunity to meet some of the guys already, and obviously some of these guys you already played against in high school, but they're on your team now at the All-Star Game. What's the experience been like so far? What's the part that you're working on at this point?
Experience has been really good. The linemen getting really getting to know each other. They're starting to move better together, and they're a lot nicer if you're not having to go against them.
And again, Daxton and Olin are here with you as well. And so you get three this year at the All-Star Game. That's representative of how well you played this year, being in the semifinals of the state playoffs. With those two guys here, how much does that help you? It looks like you and Olin will be working on the line together.
Yeah, it helps a lot because we already know what we like and what we don't like, how to block with each other, and we already built that chemistry, so we know how to work together very well.
Owen Raby here from Thunder Ridge. We'll let you get back to it. Olin Brown will come up and join us now. Do your coaches know that you're a ringer and you can play the line in the backfield as well?
Yeah, we're actually just working on a heavy package where I'm going to be the fullback, so we were just working on that, actually.
What was it like for you to experience that? What was the process like when Coach Struckoff said, hey, we're going to put you in the backfield, and then you were able to really have a lot of success with that?
Oh, it was something I've wanted to do since I started playing again, and when it happened, it was awesome. I had a blast doing it.
Like we said, Owen and Daxton are here with you, and for you, what do you hope to get out of this week, not only for yourself, but with your guys?
Come away with a win, I think. That's what I want out of this week. I want to come away with a win. And a blast working with these guys again. Last chance to play with them in the sport. So, thank you. I'm ready to go.
Olin Brown from Thunder Ridge, thanks for the time, man. Daxton Dunlap with us now from Thunder Ridge as well. We'll save the best for last, right? Daxton, you had a great career, kind of progressed as you went along and got into doing some really good things with this group here in 2021, going 11-1 and reaching sub-state like I was talking about with the other guys. Take me through and some of your best experiences and what you'll remember from that run with Thunder Ridge that maybe you hope to bring to this weekend as well.
Well, it was a good run, and I couldn't have done it without my teammates at all, because it's a whole team. You have to be one unit to be successful. And, I couldn't have done it without them. But I'm excited for this weekend, and I hope that we come out on top. We have the guys to do it. And I told them we work together.
I'm not going to make you give away any spoilers, but as far as like learning a new system, how easy has it been, or difficult maybe even? I know you're in the early stages of it right now, but what's the process been like for that?
They run things a little bit differently than what we did at Thunder Ridge. So, I mean, we're definitely having to get used to the new system, but it's not too hard to learn as long as you're paying attention.
Daxton Dunlap from Thunder Ridge. Good luck this week, man.
Thank you.
Those are the Thunder Ridge Longhorn representatives here. We have pretty much everybody that we're going to be talking to will be on the D2 East team here this week while we're at practices and kind of watching everything as far as our immediate area and local teams are concerned. So, obviously, you hear there that Thunder Ridge well represented here at the 8-man All-Star Games. So this morning they're working on a lot of just putting in the systems and things of that nature. They did a little bit of that last night. I could tell last night at practices was more like teaching, not quite as much activity, but looks like they're getting after it this morning and really getting things rolling here on the Division II East side of things. Brian Hadley from Osborne is the head coach, and we actually learned Nick Franza. I found out is from Cocker City. I probably should have known that before now, but he's a Wakanda East graduate from 1998. He's from Waverly and an assistant coach on this Division II East team as well. So there is a lot of local flavor on the Division II East All-Star team this week, Wade.
All right. Well, good thing they weren't practicing when the storms came in. They got all the practice in last night. That's what caused my problems today, getting to work late. I'm still trying to figure out how it happened. But anyway, what do we got planned for later today on your sports and then into tomorrow?
Yeah, features today on KD Country 94 Sports. So we'll feature Keaton Reeves from Pike Valley, who he's looking to play this week. He had some injury issues that he had to deal with at the end of the track and field season, but he's kind of getting out here and doing a little bit. Looks like hopefully he'll be able to get on the field on Saturday and play. So we'll have a feature on him. And then coming up tomorrow, we'll come back to practice and talk a little bit with some of the other Division II East teams. And then we'll have features on Osborne and Thunder Ridge on the website coming up later this week as well. So, yeah, we got everybody covered there in Division II East, like I was talking about earlier, and you can find everything you need to know about the 8-Man All-Star Games at 8manallstars.com.
Absolutely. All right, Dusty, we'll let you get to it, and we thank you for the time this morning.
Yep, thanks, Wade.
All right, that's Dusty Dinus, our sports director, reporting live from the 8-Man All-Star Game practices there in Beloit, and there is a lot that we can tell you about the 8-Man All-Star Games. First of all, go to 8manallstars.com, kdcountry94.com, ncksports.com, and you can get all the latest information that you need for the 8-Man All-Star Games, schedules, also stats from previous games like records and so forth and so on, and the all-time series record between East and West for both Division I, Division II, and all our coverage will start Friday. There's the pep rally in Chautauqua Park. That'll be at 4 o'clock, and that'll go till about 5 o'clock. Then there's Friday Night Lights. You can enjoy free popcorn, music, and fun at North Central Kansas Technical College Field on Highway 24 there in Beloit. Popcorn be provided by Farmway Credit Union, 9:15 or whenever it's dark. There'll be a highlight reel of the players' practice week on the big screen. If there's rain, they'll move it to the gymnasium there at NCK Tech. Bring lawn chairs. That's on Friday night. And, of course, on Saturday, it is the 8-Man All-Star Games. Pre-game coverage here on KD Country 94 and 8-Man All-Star Game Radio Network at 9:30 a.m. 10 a.m. is the kickoff to the Division I game between East-West, and then 1 o'clock pregame for the D2 game. And the D2 game will kick off at 1:30 between the East and the West. So it should be a lot of fun, and we hope that you enjoy all the coverage and all the profiles and all the extra work that Dusty has put in, and Jason's working on some features from some other schools and affiliate radio stations on the network as well. And Dusty and I'll get to record some coaches today as we go to the Rotary Lions lunch that they have, and the coaches speak there. That's always entertaining and interesting. And and then, of course, like I said, the pep rally on Friday, and then also the games on Saturday, and then we all take a very long nap at the end of all of these festivities coming up this weekend. It's the 37th annual 8-Man All-Star Games. It's the easiest way to do it in regards to labeling it, because technically it's the 36th because there was COVID, so there was no game one year. It's just easy to keep rolling here, so that's what we do. So it's technically been 37 years is correct, actually, but 36 years of games, but there have not been two games all of those 36 or 37 years. There was the North-South for a long time, and then they went to two games, and now we have a doubleheader of football. So we look forward to it. Once again, ncksports.com, 8manallstars.com, great place to get all the information that you need for the 8-Man All-Star Games. It's 80 best players in the state of Kansas convening in Beloit, Kansas. The only 8-Man All-Star Game in the state, and it happens to be hosted right here in our backyard in Beloit. So if you want to see some great football, go out, watch the games. You can't make it, you can listen on the radio. If you want to go check out, take your youngsters, maybe they're interested in football, go out to one of the practice fields tonight. They have practice up at the college. They have it both high schools at St. John's and also at Beloit, and I forgot where the other site is. So there are four different sites where they're practicing. Sometimes they'll scrimmage against one another later on in the week. So it's very interesting, and if you want to check it out, they don't scare you away. You can come over and just kind of check it out. You don't have to hide in the bushes with binoculars. they're competitive. They want to win, as you heard, but we got a lot of local players, especially in the second game coming up on Saturday. All right, the Royals, I know it's shocking to believe, but the Royals lost again. And not only are they losing, but they're not even scoring. The Royals were shut out again yesterday. 7-0 was the final. And I don't know what to say, really, other than they stink.
Can you fire another hitting coach?
I don't know. Could fire the pitching coach. That would maybe make some sense. Brad Keller, 1-7 with the loss, and has been actually pretty good. Gave up 3 runs on 7 hits in 6 innings, but gave up that RBI double in the second. And that would be all the scoring the Blue Jays would need. They added 3 in the 7th, 2 more in the 9th. And Alex Manoa was solid for the Blue Jays. He allowed no runs, 6 hits. He's 7-1 on the season. Royals had 6 hits, all singles. That's the thing. On top of that, they're not scoring. They're not getting extra base hits. They're getting singles. They don't steal bases. Wow, they walked 4 times. Yay. They left 8 on base. They've been outscored 15-0 in the first 2 games of the series. Mike Matheny's squad is now 17-37 on the year. Blue Jays are 33-22. The two teams finished their 3-game set this afternoon at the K. Brady Singer on the hill, 2-1, ERA 4.15. First pitch at 1:10 today in Kansas City. And the Royals have been shut out now 8 times, and we've only played 54 games. So once a week, the Royals get shut out. That's awesome. The Royals lost 15 of the last 18. Their run differential, which means they've been outscored by the opposition this year by 96 runs. The bottom line is the Royals are very, very bad. The Royals have been shut out 8 times. That's the most in Major League Baseball. The team is on pace to lose a franchise record 111 games, which is saying something because the Royals have had seasons where they lost 104, 106 games. They're on pace to be shut out 24 times. No American League team has been shut out that often in 50 years. The Royals on pace for 51 wins, 111 losses. Their worst records at the 54-game mark. Only one time in their history have they had a worse record than they do now after 54 games. That was in 2006 when they were 14-40. And they were also 17-37 in 2005. And in 18-19, they were barely better at 18-36. So 3 of the 5 worst 54-game starts in franchise history have come in the last 5 years. So it does feel like it's deja vu all over again. And so the Royals end up losing last night 7-0. Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, you start to wonder a little bit if the players are checking out a little bit on him. I don't know. Still looking for that big hit. I'd say they're still looking for a run.
Had a couple of chances, but needed the big hit. Same thing we're talking. I mean, the guy on the other side had the velocity, movement, and location going. And it was heavy sink, and was pounding the zone. Was efficient with his pitches, and didn't give us much. But we did have a couple of opportunities, and that's where you just keep talking about. We need the big hits, and couldn't come up with it.
Could not. Royals offense isn't very good, obviously, and the starting pitching has been decent at times, but not great. The bullpen has started to struggle, perhaps wearing down because starters not going deep into games. Zach Greinke's on the injured list. But other than that, everything's going swimmingly.
It sounds great.
It does, doesn't
sounds
it?
Sounds great.
Sounds like they might put it together here. You know, they could win 16 in a row and they'd still be 4 games under 500. So, also Major League Baseball, after a 27-17 start, the LA Angels have lost 13 in a row. After being shut out by the Red Sox on Monday night, they were 27-29 and on a 12-game losing streak. But prior to yesterday's game, they decided to fire their manager, who's won a World Series. Joe Maddon, you're familiar with him as a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
Maddon spent 2 full seasons, part of a 3rd as Angels manager, so they didn't give him a lot of time. Never finished better than 4th in the AL West, although they were on pace to make the playoffs, and then all of a sudden a 13-game losing streak. Phil Nevin, who joined the team as a coach this season, takes over in an interim role as a manager. And in his first game at the helm, the Angels saw their losing streak reach 13 as they lost to the Red Sox yesterday 6-5 in 10 innings. Which brings us to the Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
It's brought to you by the Shawnometer, and the Cubs lost 9-3.
Oh, man, is there any good news?
I don't know. It's hard to find it today.
Yeah, it's on the baseball side, no doubt. If you're an Angel fan, no good. If you're a Royals fan, no good.
A little surprised they pulled the trigger on the Maddon thing right now.
Me too.
You usually kind of, as a baseball team...
Seems like a panic move, doesn't it?
Yeah, you kind of go... You sit there at like the 2/3 part of the season, and you're like, you take away your biggest winning streak, and you take away your biggest losing streak, mm-hmm. and then that's kind of what your team is. Mm-hmm. So to do that losing streak here early... You know, like you said, they started 27-17. You know, you kind of ride out the losing streak. Yeah, 13 is
2 weeks
a
of
bit
bad
much.
Baseball, and he's gone.
Yeah, right.
In his 3rd year, and he's won a World Series. You know, there are some Royals fans on social media saying, "Well, you know, this they Joe Girardi got fired. Philly's off to a bad start, and he's been a really good manager in his time. And then there's Joe Maddon. He gets canned in his third year after they have a long losing streak. And the Royals go and lose 15-18. They can't score runs. They're a mess. Mike Matheny still has a job. A couple things of that. And then somebody said, oh, Joe Maddon would make things interesting in Kansas City. First of all, I'll tell you this. I don't really think it matters who the manager is. The Royals aren't very good. So I'll defend Mike Matheny for one little bit, and that is Mike Matheny's going into a gunfight with a knife, okay? This is not a good team. Not a good team at all. No. So I don't put this on Mike Matheny per se. Now, if the players quit on him, then, yeah, the manager's probably got to go. Now, that is on the manager. If the players just quit on him and don't try hard and there's problems in the clubhouse, then, yes, there's no doubt that that's something you can look at. But in regards to Joe Maddon or Joe Girardi coming into the locker room and changing everything, and the Royals are going to be a playoff team is ridiculous. The Royals are nowhere close to being a playoff team. We thought they would be closer and make some progress this year. They haven't. The pitching coach, you could fire him. That might help a little bit. I don't know if that's really where the Royals are headed. The other interesting thing I've seen some people say is the Royals aren't even trying to get better. And here's my thing: Do they? You're 17-37. What good does it do for the Royals if they get good enough to win 75 games? Let's say they correct the ship enough to where they get to 75-87. That's purgatory in baseball. It's like being 8-8 in the National Football League. You're in the middle. So you're better off, I mean, I hate to say it, but you're better off just tanking. And the only thing is, baseball, there's more of a crapshoot with your draft picks. You know, in the NFL, you tank, you're going to get a really good player more than likely. In baseball, could be a high school kid that may never make it to Double A. Could be a college kid that blows out his arm. There's all kinds of things. It's more of a crapshoot with baseball.
Even if they do turn out, it's going to be a while. It's usually a 2-3 year process.
Small market team having to pay a lot of money to a top pick too as part of the equation. Yeah, the Royals there for a while under Allard Baird, the general manager back in the early 2000s. They didn't draft on ability; they drafted on signability. And so, what was the point of being one of the top picks in the draft if you're signing the 12th best player?
Right.
Doesn't do you good to tank from that standpoint.
No, I guess if you're going to if you're thinking of at all of sticking with what we thought the original plan was, is to kind of get Melendez and Bobby Witt, get their feet wet a little bit here, Lynch, get him some starts, and maybe have that eye on next year, you do kind of want to see progress. You'd like to see your guys, especially guys that are going to be there next year. You'd like to see Witt and Melendez, progress through the season. Guys like Whit Merrifield, you'd like to see him, kind of even out, after the slow start, kind of get it back. Then you kind of maybe decide, is he a piece that you use next year to help them if you're really – but – you got to answer those questions now. That comes from ownership. Are you still on that track? Are you still thinking of improving in this offseason enough to really go for it a little bit next year? And I don't see the signs on the field right now that would warrant that, but,
Let's just stop. Anybody, any Royals fan or any baseball fan out there thinks the Royals have a chance to go for it next year are about as delusional as politicians in Washington today.
I'm not saying go for the...
Go for what?
Go for wild card or something.
There's nothing to go for. Yeah. I mean, this team... First of all, the plan was for the pitching to take a step forward with the young guys. It was Brady Singer. It was Chris Bubich. It was Carlos Hernandez. It was Lynch and Singer. I think I mentioned them. So let's look at this. So Daniel Lynch has been up and down. There's been flashes of really good, and then he's been not so good the last few times out. And it seems like since he came back up, he showed that brilliance. Once he went down last year, came back up, and then Cal Eldred's messed him up a little bit. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Brady Singer was starting in the bullpen this year, which was just still mystifying to me. Makes no sense whatsoever. Then they send him down AAA, comes up, looks good in his first three starts. Last start, not so good. So Brady Singer and Lynch, Daniel Lynch, those two are supposed to be linchpins to what this team's going to do in the future. You need those two. Carlos Hernandez was their best pitcher late last year as a starting pitcher. He's now back in the minors because he can't throw strikes. All right. And Chris Bubich made this opening day roster, pitched well in spring training, and then couldn't get out of the first inning multiple times. He's supposed to be a piece whether it's a reliever or a fifth starter, he's supposed to be a piece. That's a young guy. Brad Keller's supposed to be a future of this organization, okay? And he's pitching actually pretty well. He's still young in his mid-20s, but he's going to be up for arbitration here soon. I don't know if it's this year or next year. So you got to start thinking about, you know, are you going to keep this guy? He was a Rule 5 draft pick, so forth and so on. So you keep mentioning Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez. It's way bigger than just those two guys because you got Emmanuel Rivera's getting to play. That's a good thing. He's getting to play quite a bit. But Melendez is playing right field. What's the future for Melendez? If he's the catcher of the future, then he needs to play catcher and not right field. If he's not going to play catcher in the future, then okay, fine. Play him in right field every day to where he learns, you know, he learns under fire, as they say, baptism by fire in right field. What's the, is Kyle Isabel part of the future? I think the Royals are trying to find out. Will the Royals trade Andrew Benintendi? Yes, more than likely. Well, maybe they should. He's their best piece that they should trade and get some prospects. There's no doubt because this team is going nowhere. Should they trade Scott Barlow? Yes, they should. They should trade any valuable asset they have on their team that isn't a young player that they have, obviously, under team control for years. So, no, you do not trade MJ Melendez. That's just stupid. You don't trade Bobby Witt Jr. No, that'd be stupid. You trade, listen, if Brady Singer, if you don't think he is going to be a great starting pitcher, but he has a month where he's really good, if the Royals think they know more than Major League Baseball and can swindle some team to give up a ton for Brady Singer, so be it. So be it, because pitchers are up and down. And the knock on Brady Singer and who was drafted was he's a two-pitch pitcher and doesn't have a changeup. Now he's finally developing a changeup to where he's been pretty good his first three starts back from AAA. But the big picture is that these young players that they drafted have got to hit at about the same time. And that's what small market teams tend to do, at least the Royals do. The Twins have been able to do it multiple times. The Royals have done it one time. You know, they needed Hosmer and Moustakas and Salvi and Kane and Escobar all at the same time. They needed those guys at the same time. They also need to make a couple of shrewd trades. They did. They got James Shields. They got Wade Davis in a trade. Of course, the Zach Greinke trade set it all up. And honestly, if Zach Greinke didn't push his way out of Kansas City and insist he didn't want to be a part of the team, Dayton Moore might have held on to him because he was loyal and loved Zach. I mean, he brought him back at 38. And what does Zach really do for this team? Well, he's pitched well. He got no run support. Now he's on the IL. Is he a part of the future? No. And you had Mike Minor, who was actually a few years younger, that was a older veteran pitcher who was a left-hander, and Greinke cost a little bit more. So it's kind of interesting. Dayton Moore's brought Greinke back, which I'm cool with, but if Zach Greinke didn't insist on being traded back in 09, the Royals may have never had Lorenzo Cain, Cedis Escobar, and Jeremy Jeffers, who then they turned into the Tampa Bay trade to get Wade Davis and James Shields and gave, you know, Will Myers, who ended up being a decent player. I think he made an all-star team once. But the point of the matter is the Royals had to piece it together with young players coming up at the same time, okay? The strike about the right time. They had a window. There's a certain window you have as a small market team. And then be really good with it. Get, I don't know if you want to say lucky, shrewd, be really good at making a couple of trades. And then you're going to have to get a free agent or two, maybe, to fill a hole in your rotation, in the bullpen. Maybe it's at second base, whatever the case may be, the hole that you have in your offense or your defense, or you need a guy that's, you know, can come in and be a defense replacement slash pinch runner, like a Gerard Dyson or a Michael A. Taylor has that ability as well. And so that's how you piece your team together. Because the Royals are not every single player is going to be a young 25-year-old superstar in every single position. You're not going to have a playoff team that's just going to be a whole bunch of 25-year-olds. There's no way that's going to happen. But you got to have Bobby Witt Jr., as you were saying. You've got to have MJ Melendez. They have to hit, literally have to hit, have to perform. But not only those two, this team's nothing. It don't matter how many good hitters the Royals get. If you don't got anything in your rotation, if Brady Singer can't consistently be a major league starter, if Carlos Hernandez can't throw strikes, if Chris Bubich keeps getting drilled on his changeup and giving up seven runs in the first inning and getting just one out, if Daniel Lynch can't be more consistent, what do you have? I mean, Asa Lacy's been up and down in the minors, and then there's been Jackson Kowar was a wreck when he came up. They're hoping he's part of the future. He's actually regressed when he did come up to the big league roster. Was he rushed too soon? Should he stay down longer? I don't know. Will he be okay when he comes back up because he's pitched well lately in Omaha? Those five, six pitchers I just told you are the whole key. Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez are nice. They're nice pieces. They're everyday players. But this Royals team and any team is going nowhere if you have zero starting starting pitching. And right now, the Royals literally don't have much for starting pitching. You have, right now, with Greinke on the IL, you have Brad Keller. Brad Keller's your best pitcher. And now you can't even score runs for the guy, which they haven't been able to do. I think, what was it? He's only had, I forgot what it was. It was like 11 runs they've given him. And, oh, I've got it right here. I'll pull it up because Joe Goldberg put it out there, I believe. I retweeted it. 12 runs of support and 11 starts. Ooh. Brad Keller's getting an average of one run per start. So the only way he's going to get a win is if he shuts out the opposing team and has to probably go 9 innings, because the Royals probably going to score that one run after he departs and gets a no decision. So your best pitcher is 1-7, and he should be at least 4-3. And that's it. That's your best starting pitcher. Brady Singer has shown 2 or 3 really good starts, but we got to see more of that to know if he's good enough to stay in this rotation, be a part of the future. We don't know yet. There's a reason the Royals somehow, for some reason, put him in the bullpen to start the year. It means they didn't believe they thought Chris Bubich was better in the starting rotation than Brady Singer. What does that tell you? So there's still questions about Brady Singer. Daniel Lynch, I think, is the one guy that could be an ace of the staff, but he still is up and down, up and down. He gave up 6 runs and 5 2/3 the night before last. So my question is, what's going to change with this team? If they've only, since Dayton Moore has taken over as general manager, the Royals have developed 2 young pitchers, Danny Duffy, Yordana Ventura. And Ventura died suddenly in a car accident, and we didn't really fully realize his potential. Danny Duffy, he had some injuries, but when he was good, he was real good. And then they traded him too late and didn't get anything for him when he was declining. So the Royals have done two. They've developed 2 starting pitchers. How is this organization going to get to the World Series again? How is this organization going to have a winning record again, let alone make the World Series, if you can't develop pitching? What good is it to argue against myself? What good is it to tank this year and just stink as they are? And I would argue, what's the point of trying so hard to win right now too? But what's the point if you end up being at the top of the draft and you don't sign on ability, you sign on signability? Or what good is it that you sign a top-flight pitcher? He's a number one overall pick. He's a can't-miss prospect, and the Royals can't coach him up. They can't fix any kind of mechanical flaws. If the Royals have no history of developing young pitchers. If I'm a young pitcher, I don't want to be drafted by the Royals. I want to go somewhere where somebody's going to develop me into a really good pitcher, because I'm not going to just step off the mound in college and go across the yard to Kansas City and start day one. I'm not. A high school, I'm not. I need really good coaching. And the Royals, even if the Royals do get the draft with a number one overall pick this upcoming, or next year it would be, because the upcoming draft's this year, but you get my point. Do you want Dayton Moore making that choice? Do you want this regime making that choice? And do you want the same people in scouting and development and coaching to try to teach? You'll be near the front of each round of the draft. So let's say the Royals go nuts like they did that one year, and they draft a whole bunch of college pitchers. Well, how many of these guys are panning out right now? 2022 was supposed to be that year where we start to turn the corner. And instead, the Royals have tied for their worst start in history through 54 games. So there are so many reasons to be Debbie Downer about the Royals right now. And the first part is Bobby Witt Jr. can be awesome. MJ Melendez could be awesome. And that might get more people to go to games and watch high-scoring affairs. But I've seen the Royals with unbelievable players, and they stunk. Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, and Jermaine Dye were the Royals' starting outfield, believe it or not. They were all-stars. One's maybe going to be in the Hall of Fame. Those three guys were studs. You know what the Royals were? They were a losing team, because their bullpen was Ricky Blotalico was their closer. That's what we called him, Blotalico. And they had a really bad rotation. But they were fun to watch because there's a lot of runs. But they didn't win anything with those guys. And then eventually they run out of team control. Oh, no, we got to trade Carlos Beltran to the Astros. And then we get, you know, John Buck, a catcher. And we get, you know, I think it was Mark Tehan in that deal. And then we jerk him around left and right. So the problem isn't, it's development, it is coaching, it is the organization that has a problem, because they have not developed any young pitching. So Bobby Witt Jr. can go out and hit 40 home runs, and MJ Melendez can hit 40 home runs, and they can be the Bash Brothers from the A's days back in the late 80s. They can be Canseco McGuire Part 2. They can combine to hit 80 home runs and drive in 200 runs, and both hit over 300. Will that help put butts in the seats? You bet. Does that mean the Royals are going to playoffs? No, because if they have no pitching, it don't matter.
No, I understand where you're coming from. I guess if they're Now, I don't know if there's a silver lining to this cloud or not. You listed a lot of reasons why
there's
not. You got
to look really hard. You got to look really hard. Where's the silver lining?
But let's try. Let's try.
Oh, dear God.
I don't know. What else we can do?
Move on to the next topic. That's what we can do.
But these next 6 weeks before the trading deadline, before you probably unload Benintendi and Witt and
Whit Merrifield.
Yeah, right.
Which I don't know if they will.
Right. I don't know either because he's kind of.
Now he's got more money on the books. You're not going to want to take a guy hitting 220.
Right. Yeah, he's got to even out his season. He's got to, and he started to
do that.
He's got to
get hot.
Right, he's got to get hot. But you got these 6 weeks. You know, hopefully Lynch can, you know, you're past what you consider, it's not just a slow start anymore. Now you're into it. And this is, you're starting to see Lynch gets, you know, he had a few starts last year. He's got a few now this year. You know, You're going to get up to a season's worth of starts for him. You're going to let's see what if Carlos Hernandez can have that bounce back. Maybe just to tweak something down in the minors, a delivery or something like that, and see if he can improve. And you know, in 6 weeks, maybe Lynch shows some improvement. Maybe Hernandez shows that flash again that he had at the end of last year. Okay, maybe there's two that you decide. All right, we'll go on with next year. We won't blow it completely up. But then, you know, and then you can try to supplement from there, try to get whatever you can out of Bubich. And, you know, if Singer's maybe he is best suited for the bullpen. I don't know long term, but that's what this next 6 weeks is really going to be about. And then you can kind of try to mold your trade deadline strategy around that. I don't know.
We talked about it. They don't have many tradable pieces that's going to bring back very much. Whit Merrifield's 33 years old. He's hitting .217. He's not seeing a lot of bases, not getting on bases. He once was, so he's not that attractive of a guy. He might be a good utility guy that somebody wants to pick up, but at that contract now that they've given him more money, I don't know if anybody wants to bite. And if so, what are they really going to give up for him? I don't think the time's passed. For them to get fully value for Whit Merrifield, that day has gone and is passed. Can they get something for him? Perhaps. Indrit Benintendi, they could get something decent, no doubt. Bobby Witt Jr. is the future of the organization. He's hitting .215. He's shown some flashes. Defensively, he's been really good. Offensively, I think it'll come around. But honestly, he has not performed that well at the plate either. Salvador Perez is hitting .197. He strikes out a lot, way too much. But he's done that his whole career. MJ Melendez, he has struck out twice in three at-bats last night, hitting .257. I'm not, no worries there. Carlos Santana shouldn't even be playing in the big leagues right now. He was in the lineup yesterday, although he hadn't been for a few days. He's hitting .163. Kyle Isabel playing center field. He's not a center fielder. If you watch him play, he's not a center fielder. Doesn't have as much range as a Michael A. Taylor. And Taylor, of course, is a Gold Glover. But you got a guy, you have to have a guy that can cover a lot of ground in center field. So Michael A. Taylor is not available. He's hurt, he's sick, or whatever. You know, obviously, the guy that you put in as your backup center fielder won't have as much range. I get that. But Kyle Isabel's playing out of position right now. He needs to be a left fielder, a right fielder, not a center fielder, but at least he's in the lineup. He had two hits last night. I don't know if he's part of the future or not. Emmanuel Rivera, they like him a lot. Really good defensive player at third. And then, you know, he's hitting .212. And then Nicky Lopez, you know, I think a lot of us thought it was fool's gold that Nicky Lopez hit .300 last year. He didn't have a lot of pop in the bat. He's batting ninth, and he's hitting .220. So nothing to get excited about there at all. Brad Keller, of course, has been good, but it doesn't matter because nobody scores for him. Colin Snyder has the worst ERA on the team and leads the team in wins. Yeah, believe that or not. That's Royals baseball. And then, you know, Taylor Clark's not looked good the last three or four times out. He's a younger pitcher. And I don't know what the Royals have in the future for the bullpen either, to be quite honest with you. And the other problem is every time you talk about a starter and you mention Singer, like, well, you know, if Singer, they think he's a bullpen guy. Well, you know what bullpen guys are? They're failed starters. That's where you go. You fail as a starter, you go to the bullpen. Now, it's worked out for many, many pitchers. Wade Davis would be a great example. He failed as a starter and was unbelievable as a closer and a bullpen guy. Totally get that. But you can't have every single starter fail. You didn't have no starting pitcher. Somebody's got to start every day. Whether the Royals are going to go to five openers, I don't know. Maybe that's the way to change the game of baseball. Maybe that's what the Royals should do. And I'll be honest with you. The Royals are 17-37. They should try all kinds of odd and weird things. I mean, seriously, they should think about, listen, let's get Colin Snyder. He'll be the opener in 2 days. And let's Taylor Clark's an opener or whatever they want to do. And we'll have Brady Singer. We think if he really starts to struggle, let's put him, have a guy open for two innings. Chris Bubich feels better coming out of the bullpen. Bullpen pitches, Bubich pitches innings 3-7, and we might have a chance. You know, they did that kind of one game this year, and it was okay. So maybe that's what the Royals got to do. Copy the Rays and have an opener, but have an opener more often. But whatever the Royals are doing now, not working. And I will say, no matter how well you pitch, if you don't score runs, it does not matter. And no matter how well you hit, if your pitching can't pitch well, you're not going to have a winning season. And the goal, I thought, was to what? Win a championship, make the playoffs. Well, first of all, you got to have a winning record more than likely to make the playoffs, and the Royals are nowhere close to any of that. So the silver lining for me, here's my silver lining. There's only 108 games to play. That's my silver lining. Sorry, but I'm Debbie Downer today. But God bless Jason for trying to come up with some silver lining that I still haven't seen, but I appreciate you trying to throw it out
just
there.
Just trying.
I mean, you're trying. You know, the good news is, if you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, that they won last night.
He couldn't put it in. He puts it right on the stick of Kucherov again, and he scores!
Tampa Bay won their second straight game in the Eastern Conference Finals in the NHL. They beat the Rangers 4-1 in Tampa. That series is now tied at 2-2. And they will take tonight off for getting back at it Game 5 in New York tomorrow night. And, of course, this is great for the Colorado Avalanche. They get sit back, relax. They swept the Edmonton Oilers. They get the winner of that series. So they're, I'm sure, hoping for a whole bunch of fights between the two guys and turned ankles and broken noses and broken arms. And then
four overtime games.
And then hope that there's nothing left in the tank for the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Rangers. Coming up tonight, the NBA Finals resume with Game 3 in Boston. After the Celtics and Warriors split the first two games in San Francisco, each team looks to get a leg up. Boston hopes to keep control of the home court advantage. Tip-off for Game 3 is tonight at 8 o'clock from the TD Garden on ABC. It sounds like Mike Breen will be back in the booth, being the play-by-play guy. The NBA Finals, this is an important game, no doubt. Every game is important. But if you're Boston, you don't want to give home court back right away. Because if the Warriors win Game 3, then the narrative is going to change big time and saying, okay, the Warriors have figured things out, and now Boston's got to win again at Golden State. That's going to be tough to do because Golden State's only lost one home game all year in the playoffs. Yeah, but the Celtics are 5-4 at home and 8-3 on the road. So, listen, if the Celtics lose tonight, I'm not going to freak out on this show tomorrow and say, oh, man, the Celtics are doomed. Because if they get Game 4, you're back on serve, and you got to get one on the road. And the Celtics have won many games on the road against very good teams in the NBA playoffs. But I do think it would be more important for the Celtics to win, from a psychological standpoint, Game 3 tonight. I know it sounds weird to say this. Win Game 3 tonight. And if they happen to lose Game 4, I know it means the same thing, but I just think you don't want to give it up right away.
I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? You worked so hard, you stole Game 1, now just to give Game 3 back, and now you don't have home court. And then all the pressure in the world to not go down 3-1. Like, to me, Boston, this game is so big because the Warriors' job is, we just got to get one of the two. And so the Celtics better get Game 3, because all of a sudden the pressure really shifts to the Celtics if they lose Game 3 and they got Game 4 at Boston Garden down 2-1.
And especially what we've talked about, what the narrative kind of might be anyway, that the Warriors have really won 7 out of the 8 quarters or played better for 75 to 80% of the series, and that the Celtics just had that one hot quarter and stole that game. So now if the Warriors win tonight, that narrative just kind of continues. And now it's the Warriors have dominated a long stretch of the series.
Celtics were lucky. Could be down 3-0.
If the Warriors win. So that would carry into Game 4. And then I think the Celtics can win another game in Golden State. Mm-hmm. Neither one of these teams are like the mid-80s Celtics, where they go like 40-1 over the whole season at home and just dominate. Neither team really did that during the season. Golden State was a little bit better in the early part of the playoffs. But like you said, there's nothing that says shut down, no more road wins. There's just nothing that says that. So, but I do agree with you. I do think if Golden State wins this game, there is a better chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying there's a better chance of Golden State maybe finishing out the series from this point.
I agree with you totally. Game three tonight, it's Golden State and Boston in Boston. Other sports news, the All-Big 12 matchup for the Women's College World Series National Championship Series gets underway tonight in Oklahoma City. Oklahoma looking for their sixth softball national title, and they'll play Texas, and those two love each other so much. Texas seeking their first in six appearances. Game one of the best of three series starts tonight at 7:30 on ESPN. We talked about LIV Golf, and we talked about yesterday there's going to be more golfers that are eventually going to probably join and play on this tour. Here we go. Report now, Bryson DeChambeau and Patrick Reed. Those are two pretty good names, especially DeChambeau, will reportedly play in a LIV Golf event in Portland at the end of June. So they're not playing in the London event that starts tomorrow, but they will play an event at the end of June. So how is the PGA Tour going to deal with this? By the way, the U.S. Open, I think it was, one of the majors came out yesterday and said that, yes, they will allow these players to play in their championship. Of course they will.
Yeah.
Why would you keep up the best players because you're mad they went over to try to make more money? Of course. And that's what the players have known all along. And listen, if you don't care about any of the tournaments except the majors on the PGA Tour, then this is a perfect setup for you.
And really, a lot of the top 10, 12 players kind of follow that Tiger playbook and they play enough to try to stay sharp and maybe try to do that playoff thing at the end of the year with PGA. But a lot of the 10, 12 players, they're not playing 80% of the weeks. They're playing 60% of the weeks and trying to get themselves ready for the majors anyway. So, it's no surprise there. And really no surprise that the U.S. Open says, yeah, you could still play because what are they going to do? I mean, first of all, you'd have to change all these rules and, three out of the four majors aren't really PGA events anyway, so the PGA Championship is, but the U.S. Open is USGA, British Open is something different, Masters is their own thing, so
right.
Yeah, they were going to play anyway, so really no surprise there.
We mentioned Angels lost 13 in a row. More bad news for the Angels. Mike Trout, their superstar, groin injury exits after hitting a home run, so things get better for Angel fans out there. You could be a Royals fan, though, or a Cubs fan. And big news here, Walmart shoppers are going to spend $4.65 billion on the Broncos. All right. Well, you could kind of say that, I guess. The Broncos are going to have a new owner. The Broncos announced last night that they have entered into a purchase and sale agreement with the Walton Penner family to acquire the team. The purchase group is led by Walmart heir Rob Walton, who will be taking over ownership of the team along with his daughter and son-in-law. The sale calls for the Walter Penner family to acquire the team from the Pat Bowlen Trust in a move that will need to be approved by the NFL's Finance Committee and League Ownership before it becomes finalized. But at this point, both of these things seem to be formalities. So the Broncos will be run by a Walmart heir and daughter and son-in-law. Those are the people who are going to be in charge of the Broncos. So there you have it.